KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sex Workers film series hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film A Kiss for Gabriella will be shown Tuesday, April 21st at 7 p.m. Gabriella Lita is the first sex worker to run for Brazilian Congress. A Kiss for Gabriella tells the story of her 2010 campaign as she faces 822 opponents and challenges a male-dominated political system to see if a sex worker, activist, wife, mother, and cultural icon can beat the odds and win the election. Again, that's A Kiss for Gabriella, Tuesday, April 21st at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. There'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to kboo.fm and click on the right side for community events.
Hello, welcome to Talking Earth. You're listening to KBL Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. My name is Patrick Bocard. I am guest hosting for Barbara Lamorticella. And tonight I have the winners of the Bard Deluxe Awards, a whole ton of guests in the other room, as well as the one of the editors of the Bear Deluxe magazine, which puts out the Bard Deluxe Awards, and also a... fellow host. I have a guest host tonight as well. Her name is Melissa Solito, and she should feel welcome to jump in and steal the mic from me whenever she wishes at this point. Although I would like to introduce the Bard Deluxe Award winners, if at all possible right now. Can I do that, or you want to do that yourself, Melissa?
Well, Patrick, what we were thinking about, because you're in the room taking care of the sound and everything, we were thinking that maybe what we would do is incorporate introductions with the first round robin of poetry. We have six Bard Deluxe poets in the room. There are two people who are unable to be here. And we have the illustrious poetry editor, Casey Bush, who has shepherded this project through. Took a little while to actually have it hit the print. Is that right, Casey?
Oh, we can talk about that later, but let's say it was well worth the wait.
Definitely.
Yes,
okay.
It was.
Okay, so Casey is going to do this first round with the introductions and some poetry, and we are going to go in alphabetical order.
Well, I first want to say thank you very much for the bards that have appeared tonight, and we have six of the nine, and of those, Heidi Shulman-Greenwald is here, Megan Freshley, Laura Christina Dunn, Kendall Kaur, Marge Hogan, and Armin Tolentino. And we're going to go around the table here first and have everybody read a poem. And I'm going to try to drag out of them a few, let's say, details about their poetic life. So we're going to start with Kendall Kaur. And Kendall is, let's tell us about your band. Tell us about your musical activities.
Well, I play guitar, and I sing and write my own songs. That's what I do with most of my time. And I also write poems, which influence my lyrics. Yeah. And I graduated from Pacific Northwest College of Art in 2013 in the IPRC Poetry Certificate Program as well.
Cool. And tell us a little bit about the IPRC.
The Independent Publishing Resource Center is a great place because they have all the resources you need to make your own zines, publications. They have all the tools you need, and they also have classes and certificate programs, such as the poetry one that I took.
Right over on Division 11th.
Yeah.
So read us a poem.
Okay. Punk smoked jamon. Veins tied up from side to side, crossing streets of dresses and dreadlocks toward dead-end alleys. Plates in hand, Spanish and Italian spill onto the ceramic floor. Salt spreads amongst the sea like a haunted freedom. A squirt of squid ink in her ivory smile, absorption graces us. The rivers and seas remain curdled, buried under unwanted plastics and unspoken languages.
Very cool. All right, well, the issue of the Bear Deluxe, number 36, is about the poetry of place. We're not going to hear all place-based poetry tonight, but that seemed like one. Next, I'd like to introduce Laura Christina Dunn. And Laura, you were a winner of the Oregon Literary Arts Fellowship 2015. Is that true? Get a mic over that way.
Yes, it is.
It is true. And also, the last time I saw you was a picture of you in the Willamette Week for your folk opera, The Snow Queen. You were on Southwest Powell Boulevard dodging traffic with a deer's head in your hand. Is that true?
That is, I also admit that, yes.
How did the folk opera go?
Oh, it was great. We did it at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, and which is just an amazing warehouse venue. And because the folk opera was set in Detroit, we really felt like it got that feel. And we had 6 sold-out shows. So grateful for all of that. Yeah.
And you composed the folk opera. Did you also perform in it?
I admit that too.
with a banjo or without?
I was cheating on the banjo with that folk opera with the ukulele, so.
Good enough.
Because it was a little dark, and if I had played it with the banjo, it would just, you know, no one would have come out alive, so.
And that deer's head on Southwest Powell Boulevard, I assume that's on somebody's wall now, or is that still out there in the middle of the street?
I actually grew up with that deer head on the wall. My dad killed that deer, so it, you know.
Had a very special place in your
heart. Yeah, and it almost killed me for that picture, so, you know, full circle.
With cars buzzing by on either side. Well, maybe you could read us a poem.
Yes, thank you. This is from the Bear Deluxe issue, and you should pick that up because they're everywhere. Melody. Every day he sends me a photo of Hanging Lake. Thin streams of water like gray hair unfurling cascade down the walls of the small crater, falling but unable to fill the lake to its lip. Damp tree roots dangle. Gray as these streams, they look like fingers unable to clutch the soil that could sustain them. I've come to standing in car exhaust for warmth. I've come to imagining the slip of my palm along our house's wrinkled bricks as leitmotif of not knowing where he is. The explorer Everett Roos wrote in his journal, "I've always been unsatisfied with life as most people live it." Roos was not killed by the desert, as he thought he would be, but by men. Every day he sends me a photo of the lake, where half the water hangs in the air, the coalescence never reached of groundwater and the water that would stay tucked in earth for centuries. I hear a song that strays from rhythm, hear the tips of gray hair brushing against water. Here it was not enough. My mother told me a memory of her early life in Singapore, the man's feet twitching where they could find no ground, when she was part of a crowd witnessing punishment, and her mother did not tell her to look away. Somewhere there is lamb smoke swaying in the lungs of hungry dinner guests that wait, that ask the silence at the table if there is more to a gathering than earthly meat and drink. Every day he asks if Minturn is burning yet. I imagine his footsteps on a window pane. Imagine he goes places only after they are lost. That hunger is the only regularity in our life in a landscape stained by flame.
Poetry of place is also poetry of many places, so it can be a psychological place as well as a physical place, and that desert can eat you alive. It can. So next we have Megan Freshley, and Megan, I have it written down here that you won a prize in 2013 from the Academy of American Poets. Is that true?
It's all a lie.
Aha.
No, that was through my MFA program at PSU, and it was part of the Nina May Kellogg Awards, which they have in the English department there once a year. And I was lucky enough to have the judge, Jeff Alessandrelli, who's a great Portland poet, for that competition. So that was quite an honor to get that award from him.
Very cool. And in our issue number 36 of the Bear Deluxe, you published one of the most typographically unique poems. Are you going to read that one for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Okay. And this actually has its own poetry of place, but it's like a diner in Cincinnati where I think they're famous for serving hot dogs or chili or something of that nature.
That's the truth. We really like to put chili on spaghetti in Cincinnati. That's kind of our thing. And you can definitely get that at this diner. And now I was wondering if anyone would be willing to collaboratively read this with me. There are two columns.
Yeah.
Armin, did you just...
What page are you on?
Here you go.
Page 20.
Oh, thank you. All right, cool.
So this is a sort of a call and response thing.
It is. The left column is sort of a category, and then the line following it will be expanding upon that. And the form is taken from a C.D. Wright poem called Autographs.
So Armin's going to read the left column, and you're going to read the right.
Thank you, Armin. So the title here is Heliograph with Compact Mirror, Blue Jay Diner, Cincinnati.
Wallpaper.
Woodland tableau, beige background, panels broken mid-deer face.
Griddle cook sweatshirt.
Lavender, Grumpy the Dwarf, I'm awake, what more do you want?
Coffee.
Burnt, mouthfeel of haunted house smoke.
Superstition.
If a bird uses your hair in a nest, you'll get a headache.
Table setting.
7 half and halves with paper lids, Marlboro's, Tabasco.
Tinsel.
Rainbow with baseballs.
Foyer machines.
Detective supplies, loose M&Ms, bulldog tattoos, wacky sticky hand.
And glass is a slow liquid.
True or false?
Balloon.
Happy birthday, princess. Green metallic.
Superstition.
Never say something will be all right without knocking on wood.
Loneliest.
The one under the flypaper.
Nightmare.
Your boots in the sink of a public bathroom, no reflection in the mirror.
Superstition.
Don't say thank you when handed a sharp object.
Building.
Palimpsest of fallen neighbors with painted fudgesicle ad from the 30s.
Parking.
By the quarter hour.
Worry.
Mouth tastes sweet, but didn't eat anything sweet.
Superstition.
Dead snake on the bridge.
Weather.
Heat lightning, gang tensions, lightning bugs just coming out.
Song.
Bank Robber by The Clash.
Best haircut.
Stop being mean.
Superstition.
Knock on wood only in multiples of three. Now, please.
Compact.
Cover Girl, light green compact, soft honey, number 4.
That church next door.
Used to be a Walmart.
State flower.
Popcorn shrimp. P.S. I would like to be played by a young Susan Sarandon.
What a great collaboration. And it was spontaneous, even. Unrehearsed.
Thanks, Armin.
Actually, this is all unrehearsed. So next we have Heidi Schumann-Greenwald. And Heidi, my notes say here that you were poet in residence in 2012 at the Old Orchard Inn, Moultonboro, New Hampshire. What kind of experience was that?
I've never been on a residency before, and it was actually a fantastic experience. I grew up on the East Coast, and I spent a lot of time up in New Hampshire, even though I'm from Connecticut originally. And this residency actually took place very close to where I'd spent the majority of my time. And I went there, and I brought my kids with me. And so they were able to share this place that was really special and important to me. And I was able to, you know, send them to camp or hook them up with a babysitter while I would revisit a lot of the places that kind of made me who I think I am as an adult.
Whoa. What? Now that's a residency. So would you like to read a poem for us?
Yeah. So since we talked about New Hampshire a little, I will start with a poem that's kind of based there. This is called A Visible Aspect of Stillness. The sky is shattering. Ice shards thrum the roof. And tomorrow, everything will be tamped down. The highway line will separate nothing from nothing. Branches of firs and birches in sleeves of ice will clink against each other like glass. Then the pallid sun unveils itself, shimmering prisms on these waves of snow edging the lake, until only swaths of purple finches will break day with flight, garland-shaped, and tut-tut to loose seeds from glazed cages. I know it's a winter poem, and it feels like we're already in summer. But.
Actually, it's just because of the collective heat in this room from being so many people.
Perhaps that'll stall off global warming, though.
Thank you, Patrick. I'm sure it will. Okay. Well, let's keep working our way around the table. And next we have Marge Hogan. And Marge, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that you're a Spanish language teacher at Evergreen. Is that correct?
That's right. In the Evergreen School District is in Vancouver.
In Vancouver, uh-huh. And do you find that an inspiring environment? Do poems come out of the teaching experience? Or do you write on the side and do that in the day?
Mostly exhaustion comes out of the teaching experience. And I'm saying that partly as a, you know, as a personal statement, but it's also a political statement. If you know people that are teachers, those are people that work very hard.
And you are a resident of North Portland and St. John's in particular, is that correct?
That's right, Portsmouth, so right near St. John's.
Okay, and I'll get into this more a little later, but we are going to have a reading from the Bards at St. John's here on May 9th as part of the Bazaar Festival. You want to tell us a little bit about
That's right, May 9th is Parade Day in St. John's. So starting around noon, we have the St. John's Parade, and then at 3 o'clock, we're going to have folks reading at the St. John's Booksellers, which is a great local bookstore in St. John's, and it's during the St. John's Bazaar, which is a crafts and music party that goes on all afternoon.
Okay. It's not a bazaar like there's a lot of things for sale, right? It's a bazaar because it is bizarre. Isn't that right?
It's kind of keep St. John's weird.
What should we expect if we come to that event? What will be going on in the streets?
Oh, a little bit of everything. So they close off the streets after the parade, and there's music there. And again, if you want to stop into the booksellers at 3 to hear folks here from Bear Deluxe reading. And there's also, you know, food and crafts and other events. It's just a great hangout time for the family or just to have a few drinks and spend time with your friends.
And spend some cool time in St. John's, yes. Well, could you read us a poem?
Sure, I'm going to read Ode to Marcella Street. Of all the rough roads, the roughest, it runs west from Washington along the wide stretch of weeds, hill to fall, hell and snow, all holes past the park and dry fountain at the bend above Columbus, where the sky is patched with tar. Of all the bad streets, Marcella, by far the worst, the whole way, wind in the highest, wires making a clatter of steel, exposed stones, the asphalt broken in open seams that jut from the gutter. Marcella, how you must love this man who lurches down the hurricane fence and past the playground, waving like a wind vane one prosthetic arm.
Bravo.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to applaud, huh?
Patrick is applauding from the other room.
I was, and that's right. Not everyone can hear me. Sorry.
So now our last bard for the evening, and we'll go around the table at least one more time after this, is Armin Tolentino. And Armin, you too have been the recipient of a Oregon Literary Arts Fellowship. And actually, you won you took first place in the Oregon Poetry Association's contest in 2013 for a poem with a great title, A Week's Pay Lost at the Lizard Fight. Was this from a personal experience? Did you actually lose a week's pay watching some lizards battle it out?
I can never pick the right lizard, which is a a metaphor and the truth for everything in my life. No, I like making lots of things up, and I feel like sometimes we don't allow ourselves in poetry to make things up.
Okay, with that introduction, let's read us a poem.
The title of this poem comes from the Bible, the book of Isaiah. Fear not, for I am with thee, says the one whose pouch is packed with asteroids and whose fingers licked can pinch out the sun, who strikes dead your firstborn and sheep when annoyed with his salt shaker of locusts and asteroids. Fear not, but know he began with a void, and since the first Sabbath has mourned what he done. He watches while thumbing his worrystone asteroids, each etched with the names of your daughters and sons.
Nice. Armin, that was a little bit of a short one. I want another one. You guys see you got another short one right after that. Let's hear one more.
I do. I'm working on a lot of these short forms, which are called triolets. That's also from the Bible. They all have titles from the Bible. Book of Psalms. For he shall give his angels charge over you and keep you in all your ways. So when the devil dares you to climb the Chrysler building and jump, his angels are stationed, imperial force, armored and ready to catch you. Shucks, should you even trip on a cobblestone bump, they'll bear you up. They stand at attention until he says jump. And if it be his will to raise Manhattan to stumps, they'll hoist their axes in phalanx, hold steady. From the borders of heaven, they're waiting to jump onto Sodom, Pangaea, wherever. Spring loaded, they're ready.
Now, we have two Oregon Literary Arts Fellowship Award winners around the table. I know everybody here seems to have won some award, but what does that entail, Armin? What did you experience based on that award? Did it bring you reading opportunities, or did you get to go take a trip somewhere? What's the...
I feel very indebted to Literary Arts as an organization. I feel like... they validated the work that I was doing and made me feel like whatever this project is in my mind, someone else is saying, hey, it might be worth pursuing. It might be worth another year of trying to dig it out. I think they do some great work as an organization. Tonight was Verslandia, which is the high school poetry slam, and I got to see a portion of it. And they're really trying to work on their... equity, trying to make sure that there's more voices in this canon of literature in Oregon. So, I just feel very lucky to be part of what they offer.
Well, as Heidi related in her experience there in New Hampshire, a little transformative. And Laura, you were a 2015 winner of the Oregon Literary Arts Fellowship. Only been a couple months into it. Do you have anything to report?
Just complete gratitude. Every time I see someone from literary arts, I like giggle and jump on them because it's, as a teacher, I don't have to work this summer. I usually have to get a summer job, and I am just going to write all summer, and I just get to meet the most amazing community of people who are really working to get everyone excited about reading and writing, and you know, from school children all the way up to the whole community. You know, they pack Arlene Schnitzer for a poet. It's amazing.
Who could imagine?
All right. Thank you, Bards. It is so much fun being in the room with all of you. Just everybody has a very different style, but hearing all of your interpretations about poem of place, and I feel like we have this little, I don't know, this little Bear Deluxe sorority fraternity going on here. It's a little party. So, speaking of the Bear Deluxe, I'm going to start talking with Casey Bush, the poetry editor, about the Bear Deluxe and the contest and the vision behind it. And Patrick Bocard, who is in the other room keeping track of the sound. Say hi, Patrick.
Hello.
Hey, he's still there.
Yes.
Yes. He's kind of omnipresent. We can't see him, but there he is.
And some of you can't hear me either.
Yes. Yes, we are sharing the equipment here at KBOO. Patrick Bocard and I were fortunate enough to be involved in the judging process, which was really interesting, and we got to read a lot of great poems, and it was fun to get to meet the people after the contest was over and link them up with the poems that were published. So, Casey, tell us a little bit about the Bear Deluxe, and then we'll start talking about the contest more specifically.
Well, the Bear Deluxe was founded in 1992. It is a magazine that has now gone through 36 editions. It is distributed from here to the Mississippi River. We explore environmental issues through the literary and graphic arts. And many of the issues have a theme, like this one had a poetry of place theme. We have subscribers, we have advertisers, but we generally fund the magazine through grants. And this was from the Kinsman Foundation, which is located in Milwaukee, Oregon. And they fund a wide range of activities, including a number of issues of the Bear Deluxe.
Okay, and with publishing poetry of place, that's something that's really central to what the Bear Deluxe has in all of its issues, wouldn't you say?
We've always had poetry, or we've always tried to have poetry, and we had this contest really to get more poetry. And so this issue has
a lot of poetry.
A lot of poetry, right, Patrick? We have two poems from each of the winners. There were nine winners, and the ones who are not with us tonight, who I'd like to mention, include Ross Robbins, Stacy Perot, and Anita Sullivan from Eugene. So it's hard to admit this, but it was in 2013 that we put out a call that went like this. Not a famous poet yet? You can be declared a Bard Deluxe by submitting three poems. The magazine seeks new, unpublished verse to include in its special Ecolith issue. And so, you know, we received 120 submissions, and I enlisted the help of Dan Raphael, Mimi Price, Curtis White Carroll, Melissa Patrick, Camille Perry, Rebecca Olson, and Tom Webb to judge these poems. And they were some pretty interesting sessions. Melissa was in on a few of them there. It's humbling to receive that many poems and that many good poems and to think that you chose the best ones.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun, too, because just we all read the poetry and then we came together and talked about the poems. And, it was interesting for me as somebody who cares about literature and cares about writing and especially about Portland's poetry community to be able to be part of this democratic process and to really have conversations about the poetry. And there were poems that were, I would learn things about them that I hadn't noticed when I read them. And so we had a really lively conversation. It was great.
Yeah. To put it lightly, it was very lively.
Filled by beer and wine, perhaps.
I'd like to just mention a little bit more about the issue and thank a few other people. I'd like to thank Ryan Brown, the art director, who, along with Daniela Molnar and Kristen Rogers Brown, made this edition look beautiful. It's every poem is illustrated by some unique artwork. Matt Buckingham, the copy editor, who's copy editor for Willamette Week, put a lot of work in on this. We had a great article from Joel Preston Smith called Maps of Pain, Portland Poets Confess on the Open Stage. And Joel is a bit of an outsider in every world, but an outsider from Portland's poetry scene. And he really delved into it and gave us quite a portrayal of the Portland open mic poetry scene, including the Three Friends Coffee House, which now sadly is closed,
no.
Melissa.
But go ahead, Patrick.
Well, don't you have an announcement about that, Melissa, actually?
Sure. I guess this is... there are many poetry events that we're going to try to plug in about 5 minutes or so at the end, but I guess this is a good segue for me to jump in. The fun thing about the story was when the writer showed up to do the story, the coffee shop was locked. And people were sitting outside. This was kind of the beginning of the demise of Three Friends Coffee House as a business that went out of business. The reading was there for 6 years, and many people have performed, including Casey and other people you all know.
Melissa was the greatest hostess of that venue. No, and along with her colleague, whose name I'm blanking on.
David De Serrano.
And the...
and others.
Luke Leffler.
Luke Leffler.
Luke Leffler, who helped found it.
There's a wonderful website that has a podcast of all the poets that were there. I mean, 300 or so poets listed on the... And it's called the Show and Tell Gallery.
showandtellgallery.org. Because of space limitations and our limited budget, not everything going to the beginning of time is on there, but we have it on a hard drive, and maybe sometime we can share it more. But real quick, and then I want to get back to doing a round of more poetry and discussion with the bards sitting here at the table with me. So I am, as of this weekend, I have a new venue, and on the first and third Mondays of the month from 7 to 9 p.m., I'm going to be running a feature series of spoken word that's collaborative, maybe theme-based music, and I'm still making this up as I go along, but it's going to be at Soundgrounds, which is a really great coffee shop. It's over on Southeast 37th and Belmont. Great menu, very friendly staff, really a community center there in Southeast. And David De Serrano, who was helping me host the Show and Tell open mic at Three Friends, is going to be running a spoken word open mic on the first and third Mondays of the month. So he and I are going to be alternating. I think I need to take a breath. I was trying to say that all in like two and a half minutes.
So is it time to have our poets?
I can't see the clock.
Is it time to have the poets read again?
Let's take another round around the table here, and we'll start again to Melissa's right with Kendall Core. Kendall, do you have another poem for us?
Yeah. Bad guy. Angelic energy poured out of your body as you sat on stage facing the sponge of a crowd. Yourself was lost, and you transformed into a method to communicate something you barely understood. Subconscious creation is a means to understand what is not realized. As I listened and watched, I felt like it was something I shouldn't have seen, like the time I was looking for vinegar in a convenience store and witnessed a mother stuffing her purse with jars of baby food. All babies need to be fed.
Very nice. Got another one?
Oh God.
Oh, certainly you have more.
Well,
all the poets here seem to have poems coming out of their pockets.
Oh, geez Louise.
We can go around again. You wanna wait?
Should we do one more round? Yeah.
Sure. Laura?
You got two mics.
Yeah, just use one. This is Laura Christina Dunn.
A bod. She sweeps the bricks where he used to sit. The water streaks and pools. The brown puddle is tar boiling on a spoon. His sweaty face could see through the kitchen slits, where the crows tore apart the grass looking for seed. I have never wanted anything enough to scatter glass down the street, but now our mother sweeps and sweeps. Can you tell me why the crows fed on our lawn through the winter? Black feathers held stiff in slats of ice. They look like fish who could never swim back to where they were born.
Thank you. And Megan?
Thank you. This one is called Crushed Velvet is for Lovers. No one knows on the long bus ride if you make eye contact with your reflection or just look out the window. I'm staring now at how pretty my face gets with all the kudzu and pine and shoulder debris double exposed over it. Maybe I feel best steeped in myself like a ferret. In this ego weather, I can command the particles that make up the air around my seatbelt, conduct the beauty feeling through them. I sense it reaching the bus corners, the cochleas of ears, the grommets of sneakers, the no-slip tread in the aisle. Right now, it's hard because this is a big bus. There are things you can't ask anybody, and grommets are the saddest part of fashion. The particles of air, however, love to be commanded by the feeling of a mammal in love with itself. They bend, grant audience. What's the word for the infinity we feel, and how begrudgingly we feel it? As the song plays, the character watching the one they love walk toward them in the slow motion magic hour light.
Very nice. And Heidi?
So I've been playing around with a form called Golden Shovel, which I heard about last year at National Poetry Writing Month. And so the idea behind this is that you take somebody else's poem and each word in that poem becomes the last word in each of your lines, so that if you read down the end words of the poem that you write, you get this other person's poem. So I will read the poem that I used as my basis. It's called Screech Owl Song by Peter Everwine. And then I will read my poem. And I actually did a whole series of these, but I just picked one for this. So here's Screech Owl Song. My fathers, my tongue is of coral, my lips emeralds. I open my wings and weeping, leap into the heavens. So this is one of my responses to that. Foraging at dusk. Tell me again, I say. It starts, my grandfather says, before your father's 10th birthday, before the rains came, before my cow Mercy ailed and I cut out her tongue to silence her. That is how it always begins. It spirals from coral kitchen walls to a fresh plain table. My father's first rabbit trap before his lips quiver, his hands, calloused hard as emeralds, grip his legs. Always, I want to know how the open stretch of land drowned, my grandfather's livelihood folding in. No wings or money to fly him to a better place, and he would tell me if I asked. No weeping, but for the willow where he hung a swing to leap his boy, feet pumping speed into the sky, where before brushing the earth, that boy touched the heavens.
The golden shovel.
Yeah.
Well, giving away our secrets. This is how you write poetry. Very beautiful, very beautiful. Marge, do you have another poem to share with us?
I want to go home and try a golden shovel. That looks really fun. This is Weapons of Opportunity. This could be the base of a lamp, the shade even, the pewter brooch, the roach poison. You can imagine how far this can of sweet corn could go. You can picture in your hand a broken jar, long shards of the kitchen window. This is a padlock on the end of a string. This is a butter knife, a handful of rice, or any other thing. Once in a cafeteria, my mother threw a fork into the wash bin and it stuck in a man's wrist where the tines went in. If it's hard to imagine, remember that a hurricane can drive blades of wheat into a man's skull, that to see your children eat, you have already dismembered whole animals bone by bone, that some kinds of shiv are carved only from a kind of hard silence, and there is in the blade, in your own house keys, in smooth stones, in each of us, a quiet kind of violence.
Very nice. Armin, more poetry, please.
Title of this one comes from the book of Genesis, and if you're not familiar with it, if you haven't read it recently, there was Adam and Eve. They messed up. They got kicked out of the garden, and I didn't want God in these series of poems to be very one-dimensional, so I was trying to find ways to find where he was really compassionate, and in it, he makes them clothes because they don't have clothes. And now they have to go out into the scary wild. So, from the book of Genesis. Unto Adam also and to his wife did the Lord God make coats of skins and clothed them. Because he locked the garden. Because outside was glacier and their skin till then had known no cold. Because he watched blue northers lash their cheeks and eyes. As they stumbled barefoot on the snow outside. He plucked a mastodon and snapped its spine, peeled back the hide to sew for them a little warmth. His children survived, grew old, thanks to this sacrifice, because sending them outside cracked wide his heart, because he'd kill to save them from the cold.
Wow, that was great. This is fun.
So I have just a couple more folks to thank. So the Bear Deluxe is a not-for-profit thing. We have a foundation called Orlo. We have board of directors that include some pretty amazing people, and I just want to shout out to them, Sam Beebe, Molly Cooney-Metzger, Colin Dunn, Scott Fogarty, Kendra Larson, David Mulholland, and Tom Webb. And they're some of the folks that make this happen. We really benefit, though, from the wide range of artists and writers that live in the Portland area. And the bear is always, let's say, a collage or a pile on of just lots of people, their voices coming out everywhere. And this issue, just like any of the other ones, is the result of a lot of people working together. Our masthead usually includes 20 or 30 people. They are all volunteers. And we just have a fun time. And I think this reading tonight at KBOO is an example of that. And Melissa, maybe you have some questions here for our poets about their sources of inspiration, or how did they do it?
Well, I actually had a question to jump in, if that's which you could probably...
Yeah, go ahead, Patrick.
You might have to repeat it to them, but there's a form that Armin referred to that he was writing in, and I wanted to know what exactly that was.
And since we're all sharing the headphones and Armin, the microphones, you'll need to repeat that.
So, Armin, you yes. actually were you mentioned you were writing in a specific form, and I think this is more about your first batch of poems, and that I was wondering what was that form and what in like what are specifics of that form.
It's called a triolet, which is 8 lines. I first heard about it in Poetry Foundation's website, and there was some poem called "Have You Ever Been Stung by a Dead Bee?" And it was in this form, and I just loved the way it sounded. The form, 4 lines, and it's an A-B rhyme, so the N lines will always have either the A or the B rhyme happening in them. And it's just nice to have a form sometimes when you don't know what you want to do, something small to go home to that can ground you. And it became a form I really wanted to use because I was using a lot of these Bible quotes, and it was just a great way to reinterpret them without getting overwhelmed by it, because the form would guide me.
We have this illusion that free verse is really free. And of course, we like to give that feeling to the reader, but often, as we learned with the Golden Shovel and what Armin just explained, there is structure to this poetry that helps guide it, and it doesn't just come out of anywhere. And that's something I'd like to pass on to all aspiring poets, is look to other poets to learn from. And imitation is the greatest form of giving somebody a compliment. So I want to take just a moment here before we go around for one more round to talk about the upcoming readings of the Bards. Marge mentioned that the Bards will be reading at the St. John's Bookseller on May 9th, and that is part of the Bazaar, St. John's Bazaar, and we will have Laura Dunn, Megan Freshley, Heidi Greenwald, Marge Hogan, and Ross Robbins there. Then on Saturday, May 16th, from 7 to 8:30 at Mother Foucault's bookstore, we will have 6 of the Bards, Armin, Laura, Kendall, Marge, Megan, and Heidi. And Mother Foucault, if you don't know, is a wonderful bookstore at the base of the Morrison Bridge, 523 Southeast Morrison. Check it out. And then in June, we'll be having a reading at the Oregon City Library with just 3 of the Bards, Armin, Laura, and Marge. And I am planning on also having a reading later in the summer at the Glyph, which is in downtown Pearl area. So there may be other events. Keep your eyes open. We're going to try to get the Bards out as much as we can.
And if I could just mention something, which I unfortunately lost half the information of, Barbara Lamornicella, who is normally a host on the program and hasn't posted in a while because she's taking care of her husband, Robert, she has a reading coming up with Dennis McBride at the, I keep thinking Denton Library, but that's not correct. It's a library in outer Portland area, and it's on the 26th.
Good
and
luck if I finding it.
Yes, and I think someone is sitting on my notebook, and that's why I can't find it. But that's completely fine. I just wanted to mention that at least, and that I believe it's on the 26th, it's a Sunday. It starts at There's an open mic from 2 to 2.30, and then from 2.30 on, it's an hour-long reading by Barbara Lamorticella and Dennis McBride, who's really fun.
Patrick, are there? This might be a good time for you to do some plugs of other poetry events that are going on, that now was, that you have time to mention all of them.
That was the main one, and I lost the info.
Are they all in the notebook that one of us is sitting on?
quite possibly.
Let me do, if it's okay, let me do a couple of quick ones, and then we'll get back to our poets and Casey.
And this is the beauty of living in Poetland, Oregon, is there's something going on almost every evening.
Okay, yeah, and I know I apologize for everything that I miss, but Josh Lubin has a regular poetry series going on. Patrick, jump in.
Salon Skid Row, it's every Tuesday night at the Corner Bar downtown, and you can Google the address. I can't remember the exact address.
It's both Futures and Open Mic, although they're going to be doing a really interesting performance art deal this week on Tuesday, which would be tomorrow, where they're going to be reading A Season in Hell by Arthur Rimbaud.
Yeah, but I think they're reading it in the original language.
This is
French.
Fun. All right. Some people know French. And then why don't you tell about Ed's show, Patrick?
Actually, you could tell about it too. Ed Morris, the hour that stretches, occurs bi-monthly at least, twice a month. It's not actually happening tomorrow, Melissa, but like usually twice a month on Tuesdays at the Jade Lounge, which is in inner southeast, 23rd and Ankeny.
Okay.
I think that's about it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and then just real quick, and because you can also find information about these on Facebook or Google them and stuff, Curtis Whitecarroll does a really, really fine job of especially bringing some emerging poets onto a stage, and so you can look for that. And Amanda Cochran has started a new poet series, and so you can find out about that too. And then Tommy Gaffney is still hosting at Tony's Tavern, which is like whiskey and poetry on the first Monday of the month.
Yes.
And then I'm
actually reading at one of Curtis's.
Okay.
Not Word Warriors, but it's May 6th.
Okay.
At Common Grounds Cafe, and that's all I need to plug, I guess.
And there are many poetic outlets for you. So now we're going to get back to poetry and discussion, and I'm going to hand my headphones to Casey.
And I'm going to ask Kendall to read another poem.
All right, great. Is this the last poem that we'll probably be reading?
Oh, go for it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, really quick, I just wanted to mention a fundraiser that's happening tonight for my good friend Rainbow Richard. It's happening at the Goodfoot. It's already started. It's a nice benefit fundraiser for his health issues that he's been facing the last few months.
And the Goodfoot is just over here at 28th and Stark.
Yeah.
Very close by.
So it's going to be a great place filled with amazing people, and I encourage all of you to attend. It's a donation basis, so you don't even have to pay if you don't want to. All right, so this is a poem called Price Street. I have my mother's skin and color, my father's nose and toes, my grandmother's hair, my father's timing, and my mother's whining. We're staying on Price Street. I want to stencil the sidewalks with the words, how much? How much time do we have? How much effort must we put in? How much is a waste? How much is it worth? How much do we value? How much do you want? How much do we need? I wait in the sun, practice being open, share my thoughts aloud.
Thank you, Kendall. Laura, do you have another poem for us?
I do, and I have an evil plug, too.
Excellent.
My press, Dancy Girl Press, is having a reading on Friday at In Other Words on Killingsworth. I'm reading with a bunch of the Pacific Northwest poets that they've published. So, come to that.
And that's a publication you're talking about?
Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit more about it?
They're all chapbooks. It's called Spider Blue. And I read the last poem from it, and this is also from it. And also thank you, Casey, for everything, and thank you guys for having us on.
This is our idea of fun.
I know, so much poetry. I don't ever get to talk about poetry with anyone, except for people under 7, but without Messiah. I cannot see underwater, but I see in the puddles our bodies dripped on the tile. how you came home from class to tear apart a book and paste the pages over the walls, to shoot a fire extinguisher so its dust paints the room, and you paint your body stone blue. In my dress and stockings, I dip myself in the bathtub to coax you in. You slipped your body into the water with me, my dress drenched from egg blue to the blue of night. The paint hid your skin, and all I wanted to see was that you were still beneath. I scrubbed you and worried you would drink more paps by the fire and listen to me coo, slam porch doors, know nothing of gods, gods you worry I will make friends with. You keep asking if it is night. It is night in my uterus, where paint has slithered up, blowing the god hands that grow there, that you have told me grow there. But I think I grow no messiah, just a fatherless finger painter, muraling my insides so they are not gray as organ walls, but scenes from Exodus, an ashen sky, starless to a million travelers, blind in sandstorms, asking how their family can make it through the Red Sea.
Megan, do you have anything that you'd like to tell us about in terms of upcoming events, or just want to read another poem?
I don't have any upcoming events. I just want to say thank you so much for having us. And
Let's thank Patrick and Melissa for sharing Talking Earth with us. That's really
especially Patrick.
Yeah,
Patrick Bocard. It's a pleasure.
All right, thank you. Thank all of you for coming
so
on.
So this one is called Throwing Food into Surprised People's Mouths. I refresh my browser again, expecting the thing to be there. I look at Gmail, Tumblr, BBC News, just in case. My peers stand in the woods with well-placed tattoos. They wear Navajo blankets, looking right into me over their shoulders. I go for a walk down an old road in Romania on Google Earth to clear my head. I get a normalizing gaze from a man in a nice overcoat. Didn't it seem like he felt me here in my bed in the future as I passed him in the camera-mounted van looking? Amazon sends me an email. I want to be the one to hold you at night while you snore. The warm, polite body of my laptop regards me so openly in my Craigslist bed. The coming-of-age TV shows make me cry, especially if the episode involves redemption. The character has fucked up so badly, so completely. Someone realizes, and then they say, it's going to be okay. They hold the sides of the character's face in their hands, and also they say, it's not your fault. And the character cries, and it's not their fault. I refresh my browser again, and now there's an email from God. It's over. You did good. You can even turn off the search bar in your chest.
And Heidi, do you have any events you'd like to hype here, or just another poem?
No events, just another golden shovel.
Excellent.
If you'll indulge me.
Oh, excellent.
This one's called My Crooked Life. I hear my daughter speak of fathers where there are only men. My flip book passed. My tongue is heavy, is rooted with secrets. She flushes coral and asks again. My silence prevails. Her lips are never still. My girl wants emeralds. Facets of truth, depth, brilliance. I cannot bear it. If you crack open green, what do you find? My daughter says. Wings of grass, leaves, and sometimes money. I am weeping in the kitchen. Will those wings leap you into your dream? I ask. She searches into her palms. They will leap us beyond the roof, she says, to our heavens.
The golden shovel. And Marge, how about another poem?
Great. So this is from the issue of Bard Deluxe. Really looking, or Bear Deluxe, really looking forward to the next issue coming out here, and it's been a real pleasure to meet folks through through participating in the magazine.
And I would point out that the next issue will not be a poetry issue, but it will focus on wolves. And we are looking for more people to be involved with that issue. We do have more funding from the Kinsman Foundation, and we're calling it The Howl of the Wild. So anybody out there that's interested in participating, please write the Bear Deluxe at our email address, bear@orlo.org. But Marge, please.
Thanks, Casey. So this is Willamette Cove. Anyone's nest is here among cement and pine, small boats drawn under two signs that say dangers exist and do not fish. The footprint of a fallen factory where treated wood was stacked and loaded onto ships rests run up against the tracks, its concrete scoured and cracked by plain small grass. Zinc in the stones in the waves that lap the transom of this skull down for the day, her hull damped by rain, one lonesome heron, endless gulls. Sound of a Southern Pacific train lumbers toward the trestle, under the pilings tremble, a crushed bank breathes creosote and copper. Once I saw a kingfisher here, no lie. His raw color clear above the water, he looked at me, then turned his face. A bird knows how they keep life in a poisoned place.
And that was a poem that was published in issue number 36. And I would like to mention that among our judges, Paul Ann Peterson, the former Oregon Poet Laureate, was involved in the judging, and she had to say, and I'll just embarrass a couple of you here, of Marge Hogan, one of Marge's moving lyrical poems offers us the surreal terrain of dreamscape. The other plums the eerie resonance of the real world we all share, the one in which an iconic bird can know how to keep life in a poisoned place. Thank you, Paul Ann Peterson. And finally, we're going to turn to our Bible scholar, Armin Tolentino. And I was kind of surprised to hear the poems you read tonight, because the poems you have in issue number 36 are kind of apocalyptic and just that last book of the Bible. I'm glad to hear that you've read other ones. Do you have something else biblical to share with us, or just apocalyptic?
I do. You know, talking about biblical scholars, the reason I've been interested in this is back in 2011, a guy named Reverend Harold Camping predicted the world was going to end in May. It doesn't seem to have been the case, but he believed that because he said the numbers 5 times 10 times 17 is telling you a story. And I don't know what those numbers meant to him in the Bible, but they meant the world was ending in May 11th. So
last year or this year?
2011.
Oh, heck.
I think we got past
that. We got past that.
So this speaker is a guy traveling across the country thinking about this prophecy. Simple math, Sweetgrass County. His prophecy chomped the bit too hard. 3 days delayed, or so I'm guessing. Who knows? All dawn, lightning's crooked fingers have jabbed the Cayuse Hills to purple, fried to crackling what few local stations my radio catches in Sweetgrass County, Montana. Or perhaps this really is the last my species has to say, an epilogue of static, postscript as the world splits open, a crack in Earth's mantle, long as I-90, exposing the planet's magma-red bloodline. With 2 residents per square mile, if any had been raptured, how would I even notice? No cars abandoned. Travelers like me don't earn salvation if we won't even deign to park and remove our flip-flops on this highest of holy days. I'm just making such good time. It's simple math. 20 over the generous speed limit plus tailwind. A hubris in thinking no troopers or horsemen are following. His math, a story told in numbers. 5 for atonement. My fingers that brushed the beads of the rosary hung from the rear view, those sorrowful mysteries braided in wax. 10 for completeness, the toes to walk the path of the Lord. Adam to Noah, 10 generations of our species allowed our missteps, our fuck-ups, until God, fed up, releases the flood. 17 for heaven, my number of road hours from Kansas, Wyoming, into southern Montana. God's country, the closest to heaven I'll get. And God, what math are you solving today? Is this planet a bead on your abacus? Do you slide and slide us to subtract, pushing apart the wheat and the chaff, the wheat?
Wow. Thank you all for sharing your art tonight. I'll let Casey and Patrick wrap up.
I'd like to thank the Bard Deluxe Award winners, Kendall Kaur, Laura Dunn, Megan Freshley, Heidi Schulman-Grinwald, Marge Hogman, Marge Hogan, sorry, and Armin Tolentino for coming on tonight and reading. And I'd like to thank Casey for kind of co-hosting along with Melissa Silito. Thanks for co-hosting. And all I got left to say is thanks, all of you. And stay tuned for Gremlin Time.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th Annual Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon on Sunday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Interstate Lanes in Portland. 12 registered bowl-a-thon teams will be bowling to raise funds for the Network for Reproductive Options Abortion Fund to help make reproductive rights a reality for those who can't afford to pay for an abortion. Again, that's the Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon, Saturday, April 25th, 4 to 6 p.m. at Interstate Lanes, 6049 North Interstate in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We bowl away our daily cares with little strikes and little spares.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of What the Festival, a music and arts festival June 19th through the 22nd.